As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Yas here, and I just wanted to say it's great to have you join me today because I'm sure we're going to have another fantastic episode. So whether you're here for the first time or if you're one of the repeat loyal listeners of the show, I truly appreciate you. But before we get to today's guest, I just have a small favour to ask, and that's if you could just take a brief moment to hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. Ensure that you share it with all your coaching friends, and don't forget to get in touch, guys. Let me know your thoughts on what you think of today's episode or any of the recent episodes you've listened to. You can do this on Twitter at The Coaches Net. Once again, that's at The Coaches Net. And please make sure you do, as I'd love to hear your thoughts, guys. Anyway, on to today's show. I hope you enjoy it. Have a great day, guys.
The Coaches Network.
Hey, guys. You're now listening to The Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent, and personal development. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a UEFA A-licensed football coach developer, and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy. Right, guys, welcome back to the Coaches Network. My name's Coach Yas, and I've got a very special guest with me today. My guest today is Jamal Campbell-Rice. Good evening, Jamal. How are you doing, man?
Good evening, Yas. All good, thank you. Hope you're well as well.
Very well, and I'm really excited about this conversation we're about to have. I'm sure we're going to pack some serious stuff in this next hour or so. Jamal, just... Before we get to the thick of it, maybe just give a brief insight around who you are, what you do, and we'll go from there.
Obviously, just introducing my name, Jamal Campbell-Rice. Ex-professional footballer now. Had a career spanning, I think it was over 20, 21 years. Started off at Charlton, came through the ranks there. Various loan moves, Leighton Orient, Wimbledon, Chesterfield, before I made a permanent move to Rotherham. Southend, Barnsley, Bristol City, Knox County, and so on and so on. Obviously represented my country as well, which I'm extremely proud of. Retired, just on lockdown. It was almost forced upon me. It was actually the start of my coaching journey. I was at Colchester. As player under 23's coach, which I really enjoyed. It was a shame that lockdown cut it short, but still, obviously, like, I'm not the only one that suffered. It really gave me a taste for coaching. Ended up doing maybe just over a year at Stevenage's Foundation Phase Lead, which I thought was, at the time, wanted no part to do with that, really and truly, if I'm going to be brutally honest, but I thought it was really, really good for my learning, something that I needed to do, strip it right back to the basics, go with the babies, and believe it or not, thoroughly enjoyed it. But there was always that burning sensation to get back to PDP age. And then ended up at Peterborough, where I've been for over a year now, coming up to a year and a half, which has been fantastic. And most recently joined the FA as one of the part-time coaches, part-time coach for the under-19s, one of the assistant coaches there. supporting Simon Rusk, who's the head coach, which is really good. But been fortunate enough to jump on another camp last week with the under-15s talent ID. And next week I've got another camp I'm going with the under-16s of Spain for a tournament. So yeah, that's just a brief synopsis on my journey. Obviously it's a lot longer than that, but I just quickly fired it out as quickly as I could there for you.
Yeah, no, definitely, man. You look, you've managed to kind of really unpack. I say unpack. You've managed to kind of jam pack, you know, the last minute with 24 years of experience, maybe longer. And I'm sure there's going to be so many ups and downs that have happened within that, and so many challenges that you face, as well as many successes. So, you know, let's go back right to the start of that journey. We said you came through the ranks of Charlton, but before that, you know, when did you first get involved in football? What did that look like? And you know, a lot's changed over the years since certainly. You were younger, I was younger, very different environment. What was that like for you?
To be honest with you, like, I actually started playing football really, really late in comparison to when everybody else really starts playing. Normally people are like, players that start playing from the age of 5, 6, 7 in academies, 8, 9. But I was never really interested until I'd probably say about 13, 14. Didn't play at all. I was more interested in watching wrestling and playing with wrestling figures, to be brutally honest. And it was obviously playing.
Who was your favorite one?
Ultimate Warrior.
Yes.
Yeah, Ultimate Warrior was a serious dude. Yeah, he was powerful. The face paint, the muscles, the armbands, the
yeah,
whole lot.
Yeah.
Like, little shaking the top rope and all that. That was my vibe. But yeah, I was addicted to that, and it was actually being at home, and it was like I'd want to watch wrestling, and my stepdad would want to watch the football, so it was like my mum would like be half half, so I'd always go the first half, watch the first half of wrestling, then he'd go into football, and I was always fuming. But hey ho, that was probably the start of my love for it. And yeah, like I said, didn't start enjoying it until I was in the playground at school. Obviously, like, the one attribute that I always had, I was really quick, nimble. And one of my best friends, like, Irish boy, Noel Murphy, he was like, oh, come and play for my Sunday league team. So I did. Obviously, it was raw, offside, non-stop. Didn't understand the offside rules, just running for the sake of running. But yeah, just quickly found a love for the game, and it just started from there, to be honest.
Decent. So, you know, you talked there about obviously not joining the game early on. What was it about football at that age, you know, that caught you? And when did it start to become a thing where you've actually, right, I'm really into this? Because obviously you said that your mate of yours got you into football, or asked you to come play Sunday league. At what point did you feel like, actually, yeah, this is something I really want to do?
That's a good question. To be honest, I don't think there's an isolated incident or a point in my childhood where I was like, oh, yeah, it was just like the more that I played it, the more I was just enjoying it. And to be honest with you, my mum was quite strict with me. Like, if I wasn't up to it with my schoolwork, or if I get in trouble, there was a time in my childhood that she stopped me playing football for a year because went out, as you do, like, with your friends and stuff, come back late. And she stopped me playing. These times I was at Mill. No, that's a lie. I was still playing grassroots. Yeah, I was playing grassroots, and she stopped me playing for a year. And that was tough. Obviously, I was still going out the front and playing, but actual playing with my team and stuff like that. It was a whole year, and I had to beg her and all the rest of it. And finally, I think I got my old coach to call her up and like beg and plead, and she finally let me again. So. But yeah, that was a tough time. But yeah, it was obviously over a course of like a period that really fell in love with the game. And I think it was a little bit like the success I was getting from it, obviously, was quick, and like I could dribble, didn't really understand the rules and stuff of the game still, but I just had that raw ability that I fell in love with, to be honest.
That's quite interesting, because obviously you mentioned there that, you know, you had that year out where your mum kind of kept you indoors, if you like. And then you've obviously then got assigned to a club. You said you mentioned there Millwall. That must have been a massive thing for you, because obviously, you know, you've taken that year out, and they must have seen something in you that you thought, you know what, actually this kid ain't played for a year. But we you know, let's take a look at him.
How that obviously jumping on into secondary, obviously I was in secondary school, playing for my school, then playing for my borough, then ended up playing for my county as well. And I've been on a couple of trials previously. I was at Chelsea. I was training at Chelsea for about 6 months, maybe just shy of that. Wasn't getting no love from them, no joy. Obviously the standard was mad high. Then got recruited by Watford. Was in there for a while. Again, wasn't getting no love back from them. I was just training. Never got released from either of them. But it was just training. But there was no real ends to the means to an end, I should say. And then remember playing for Harrow against Brent, and that was always the real big rivalry. Whenever you play against Brent, being at Harrow, we couldn't stand that Brent lot, and always wanted to win. And they were fiery games. I mean, like, remember having a one game was particularly good, and remember this back in the day, like the scouts could approach you. Obviously, he's approached my team manager, for Middlesex at the time, and then he just said to me, "Well done." I remember my manager of Harrow just gave me his card, and just went from there, really. Like, got my mum to call him up, organised when to come down, and it was literally, I went training at Millwall. We were late because of we from West London. We was living in Northolt, and we had to drive all the way over to Sheen. They had their thing, and that was a slap. And obviously my mum being at work, so she got back, and I was like begging and pleading. She was like, "Oh, there's no point." Begged and pleaded with her anyway. Finally got over there. I think there must have been about 40 minutes left of the session when I arrived. But in that 40 minutes, the scout was there and the academy manager was there. In that 40 minutes, they offered me a contract there and then. They offered me schoolboy forms, which was a real proud moment. Like, the academy manager literally opened a boot, his boot and a car, gave me a tracksuit, a coat. Obviously, I wore it the next day to training. And yeah, I felt like I was a man. But yeah, and then I think it my thoughts and feelings also, everything just became a lot more serious, and I had that drive and that hunger then that, like, right, this is what I want to do. Like I want to be a footballer. 'Cause in my school, I had a three or four boys that were at QPR, on QPR's books. I had one of them was on Wickham's books, and obviously then me going on to Millwall's books, it was like a big thing. And then from then on, it was like, right, yeah, I want to play football.
Just, talk about it. You got there late, it happens. Many clubs just turn around and say, right, you're late, off you go. But that's it, end of. Not really truly appreciating some of the kind of the considerations you've just mentioned around mum coming from work, having to then travel from West London through to through over through to Southeast or whatever that might be like, and the journey that takes. I guess in your case, mum might have been driving. For some kids, they don't even have that. So what was it? There must have been something, outstanding that you demonstrated within those 40 minutes that you made him think, right, we need to take him.
You'll have to ask them. But just going back to your point on like that's how I am with my boys now, that there's sometimes, obviously, we have to be disciplined. Coaching is not just about coaching on the grass. It's about the off the field stuff. We're trying to teach them about life, not just about football. I certainly am anyway. I see myself as a mentor to the boys, somebody that I try and give them real life experiences in the way I talk and what I've experienced. And you just hit the nail on the head. Some boys, you don't know their background, why they're late. Like, mum and dad might not have a car, they're traveling from across London. Some are walking like from like an hour and a half, 2 hours. Like, that's real life. So, and I'm big on like discipline and being on time and all the rest of it. But not everyone's the same, not everyone's background's the same. So there is that level of understanding that you have to have as a coach, a teacher, a mentor, whatever it may be. That, like, I don't know, Jermaine's route into training might be straightforward, but little Dave's route might be completely different. And they're the understandings that I think we as coaches, mentors, have to understand as well, that everyone's backgrounds completely different. So although that we have to treat them all the same, we have to treat them a little bit differently as well. Because like we're saying there, like we're alluding to, that everyone's backgrounds are very, very different.
Yeah, no, 100%. And there's one kind of key moment in my journey where it's just really stuck with me since. I remember I must have been maybe 1 or 2 years into my coaching journey at the time. And there's this one kid who was always late, regardless, or especially the midweek session anyway. We had two sessions a week and he was always late. And I realized I never actually took the time to actually find out what was going on. Now, I come to find, I'm running a session in Northwest London in Brent. This kid's traveling from Peckham just to come to my sessions. Now, as soon as I've realized that, I thought, right, okay, I'm not even going to be mad at you for being late. But what I now want to find out is, what's happening at this environment that's making you want to travel from Peckham, where, there's probably 1,000 other clubs that you could be going to in between here and there. So I was more interested about trying to find out what was something in this environment must have been going right for him. And what was that? So that was a key learning for me. And just to kind of build on what you said there as well, it's about treating, as much as it is about treating everyone the same, I don't believe in treating everyone equally. I think it's about treating everyone fairly. Having some core guidelines that we kind of stick to, recognizing that, like you said, everyone's got individual needs and differences that we might need to cater to and support around that as well. But I really like the piece that you talked there about, the role of the coach. It's not just to be the coach and maybe educate them on the game, but educating them, about life, using football as a tool to do that. So, just to expand on that, what do you see as the overall role of the coach? Because this is often a topic that's debated by many.
Every coach is different. Like, you and I are two completely different coaches for various reasons. Like, my background's obviously I'm coming from playing. So, like, straight away, I can coach the boys in a different way because I've got good and bad experiences of what my journeys look like. Do you get what I mean? It's like, in terms of, I'll give you some examples. So, obviously, being a London boy, the first time I moved away from London when I signed for Rotherham permanently, moving to Rotherham, well, Sheffield, but signing for a club, Rotherham, really good club, was buzzing there, was in the Championship. I walked into a dressing room, only black man there. That I've never experienced that. Coming, signing from Charlton, where obviously London, Charlton, very gentrified. And you walk into a dressing room, everyone talks mad, like in terms of the accent. Like, I don't get their banter, they don't get mine. Like, it was freezing cold, raining every day. I'm living on my own in an apartment in Sheffield on my own. So like, these experiences for me shaped me as a person and as a man. So like, I say to my boys all the time, like, they're worried at Peterborough, like they're worried about whether or not I'm selecting them. But how about if a manager tells you don't want you no more, and like Yeovil's coming for you, like you've got a family and you've got to move down there, and you get injured, you're out for 2 years. What's your mindset going to be like that? You get released, you ain't got a club. Yeah, you're on X amount a week, but now you're on X amount a week. How are you going to deal with that? So I'll talk about life experience. I can feed all of this stuff back to my boys because, yeah, you want to be the best player on the grass, but the best players on the grass don't always get that break and doesn't always look like that. I might think you're the best on the grass, but I might leave, go somewhere else, or get the sack. Another one comes in and doesn't rate you. And like, all these experiences, like, you might, even off the field stuff, you might be going, somebody in your family might have passed, you might not be able to deal with it well. I've played with players like that can't deal with it. Players that are going through divorces and stuff like that, loss of siblings. And there's just so many life experiences that I've been through and I've seen, been through myself and seen other teammates go through as well, that I can feed back. And like, at the minute, like, my boys, they're 16, 17, 18, and they think just the football is just a straight line, it's linear, and they couldn't be any more confused. So I'll just try and guide them in that way, just to, like, there's worse things that are happening. There's like, your journey is going to look very, very different from the guy that's sitting next to you. I remember I was at Bristol City and I was playing with Cole Skuse, like, top player, very, very good player. He's at Colchester now, but for the Lions. He's played for three football clubs. He played for Bristol City for three quarters of his career, Ipswich for the rest of his career, and he's just been at Colchester for the last bit of his career. He's had three clubs. That's unheard of. I've played for 15 plus clubs, you get what I mean? Traveling up and down the country. So, like, as a footballer, yeah, it gives you a good life, and I wouldn't change it for the world, what football brought to me. But it's not that. I'm not the only person involved. It's like your family, your partner, your children, move them out of schools and stuff like that. Even now, it's like I'm coaching. I've got my two youngest. Like, let's say I get a role abroad or up north or further down south. It's those conversations that I've got to have with my family, or do they come with me? Do I uproot them? Do I leave them here and I do all the commuting? It's just like there's so many factors that the boys don't get right now. So yes, I'm a coach on the grass, and when it comes to a Saturday, we want to win games, but I'm trying to prepare them for a life in the sport, to try and give them all my experiences into them. And some of them like will take it on and understand it and hear it, and some of them will just be like, oh, Jammer's just going on again, he's just waffling. But
I
the
mean,
one going.
no, I was just going to say, I think, but you mentioned there obviously several times, obviously you're trying to teach them about life in sport, but these are life skills that are going to be transferable regardless of the industry you're working in. And I think the other kind of thing to kind of really think about it is we're so naive when we're young. I'm sure you've been there. When you were young, you think to yourself, what's mum and dad talking about? You grow up 10, 15, 20 years later, you think, okay, now I get it. Now I get it. And that's exactly that, that's the mindset you get. It's one of them ones where you won't see it till you see it, if you get it. But there's a lot of stuff that you kind of talked about in there, in terms of the individual variables and considerations that someone might have to make around their journey, their career, for different aspects, whether that be family reasons, whether it be personal reasons, whether it be, whatever else it might be. And you also mentioned the amount of clubs that you played for. And at the top of the conversation, you mentioned that several of these clubs were also on loan. So, what does that do for a player, when you're having to constantly go out on loan? And what are those conversations take, what kind of conversations take place in the build up to that?
Yes, I'll be honest with you. It was, see, some people, I remember when I was at Stevenage, and like I think it was a Sun paper or the Mirror, one of them like came and done a piece on me, and then like the headline was like the journeyman and how I felt about being a journeyman and playing for X amount of clubs and all the rest of it. I did not care. I had one sole goal when I was a kid, and I was like, I cannot say that I made it as a footballer until I played 500 games or more. And I achieved that. And whatever that looked like along the way, there was no manager, whether you come in and you tell me that you love me. If you love me, play me. If you don't, leave me alone, let me go. It's as simple as that. I was never one of those players to, yeah, I earn good money out of the game. I was never one of those players to be like, oh, I don't care, I'm just going to go shopping or go for food. Nah, I want to play football. I want to play football. Like, that's why I'm here. At the end of the day, if I'm not playing, let me go somewhere else where I'm going to play. I remember when I was at Sheffield United, and Nigel Atkins come in, Nigel Clough signed me, and then Nigel Atkins come in. And he was like, yeah, Jammer, I'm a big fan, blah, blah, blah. He weren't playing me. I'm not joking. I think I had a conversation every week until he let me go. And he probably hated me in the end. So I was just like, listen, look, I just want to play football. Like, there's nothing against you. There's no bad vibes or whatever. I just want to play football. And whether that's me playing for 100 clubs, two clubs, whatever, or the 15 clubs that I played for, there was nobody getting in the way of me playing over 500 games. And I went on to play, I think it was like just shy of 600 games, including being an international. And that's another story, like being an international representative. Never in my wildest dreams would have, like, even could even imagine playing at that type of level, playing in the Gold Cup, like playing in World Cup qualifiers, traveling all over the world to represent my country. That's a privilege that, like I exceeded even my expectations. Getting bought for money and all of these things that, like, I just wanted to play football. But like, it's mad because COVID happened, and I didn't even celebrate my retirement, which sounds nuts. I didn't even, like obviously you get a lot of, well, every player, like they announce their retirement, whether it be on Instagram or like Sky Sports or whatever, like LinkedIn. Like I never did it because like COVID kind of like hindered that. But sometimes when I sit down and I reflect on my career, like that I'm proud of me, like for what I achieved, you get what I mean?
Yeah, no, and big respect for that. I was literally having a conversation with someone a couple of days ago, and it's like, I think sometimes we need to take that second just to pause for a moment and just reflect on what we've been able to achieve and just celebrate our wins. I don't think we spend enough time as individuals doing that. And I think it's just like life becomes so fast paced at times that we just skip by day after day in a bit of a routine and just, in a rat race and not like. Just whatever you've been proud of in your life, whether it's the fact that in your case you've played just shy of 600 games, you represent your country, or whether you're someone else listening to this and thinking, right, do you know what? I've just become a father for the first time. Celebrate that, man! Like there's a lot of things that we kind of overlook, and it's just having that gratitude, just to recognize that actually, do you know what? This is not about anyone else, and it kind of comes back to one of the things that you were saying. I think one of the key things I'm kind of really jumped out at me as you're speaking is. It's just never personal. It's just I just want to do what I love, and whether a manager didn't want you to play or wanted you to play, it's just like right, I just want to play. So if you're going to be the one that lets me do that, then cool, we're on good terms, isn't it? Not to say that it was bad terms if that wasn't the case, but just let's keep it moving. This business is what it is. Let's move it on and let me go somewhere else and get what I need to get. So I mad respect for that. But just within that. You talked obviously about representing your country. How does that come along? How does that approach look? And you said it exceeded your expectations. When you got there, though, was there any major surprises for you? And obviously coming from England, obviously Jamaican heritage and the massive differences that there could be in the cultures there. Obviously, you go there, you climatize, you're just gonna fit in straight away. But was there any things that you started to look at and think, right, you know what, this is nothing like what they're doing back at home.
And you just hit the nail on the head. It was polar opposites. So it was like I, it was one. It was obviously a culture shock. Obviously for football, like in footballing terms. Obviously we're playing week in, week out. At the time, I'm playing obviously championship football and stuff. Sorry, scratch that. So the first time I got called up, I was at Charlton. And there was whispers that like England, like the younger age groups were looking at me and stuff like that. So obviously Jamaica obviously caught wind of it, blah blah blah. And I got called up to remember my debut was at the Majeski against Australia. There was some like big players playing, like see back then Ricardo Gardner, Ricardo Fuller, Richard Langley was in the squad, Kevin Nisbet, Jason Yule. Obviously, all these guys like Micah Hyde, they were all established within the national team setup and stuff like that. So obviously, it was a big thing for me. Then I went on to play quite a few games in the under 23s for Jamaica, but then quickly got back into the senior team and I think I got like 30 odd caps for Jamaica. But it was going over there. It was just like going over in your state like. The accommodation you're staying in, imagine just a house, like a house where you're in now. And it's just beds in every room. And I was just like, it was just a mad culture shock. Like, but the biggest thing for me was just when you're playing the games in the stadium. Obviously, the stadium was massive, ram packed, singing the anthem, playing those games. Those like the feeling that gave me was insane. But leading up to that. Like just the travel and like how laid back everyone was. Like you're asking for stuff and like it's just they just do it in their own time. It was just typical Jamaicans, I guess.
Well, it's quite interesting. You obviously mentioned that because it's the way I like to look at it, is I don't think it's lack of seriousness, it's just a different approach.
Culture, it's just
Yeah,
the
it's the
culture.
cult. It's the culture, and I think for some people look at it and be like, oh, that's not professional. But actually, well, it's all subjective, isn't it? Like, I mean, if that works for the people that you're working with, then so be it. Especially now, I guess what one thing I kind of really jumped out at me is where you were speaking is when you're all getting together, it's not the same as a club environment, I would imagine. You know, getting together, represent your national team. Would you say that there's much more of a unity there? Because you don't often hear in national teams where there's, maybe conflicts that often amongst players. It's a lot more like we're here. Would that be fair?
So the biggest thing, going and playing for Jamaica, listen, like obviously being within the Football Association now with the younger age groups in the 19s and helping the 15s, and like all the players come from different places, so like not everyone knows each other, so it is that getting together, and then as staff you're trying to create that bond and that togetherness and all the rest of it, and it's hard to do that on camps when you're only together for a certain amount of time. When I was with Jamaica and playing with them, there was like a, I don't want to say a divide, but it was kind of a divide between like the local Jamaican players, the actual Jamaican players, and the ones coming from England to come over and play.
Within that, then, was there an element of, because you're not from here, as in you're not here in Jamaica, you're not really one of us?
That we used to say that, yeah. But it's almost like when you're in Jamaica playing, when Jamaicans really start in football in terms I'm talking, when they really started to respect you is when they could see that you could handle the ball. And like when I first went over.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise, and with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
These days, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make all kinds of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more, right here in the USA. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs in towns and cities across the country. And jobs bring pride, purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.
Over there, and before we started training and stuff, like everyone was standoffish. I was like the black sheep, the loner. Then the balls come out, and then we're doing our bits and bobs, and I'm stripping people, and then they warm to you, and then they're like, "Oh, he can play." Like, so then it's like then you're almost like then you're accepted. So Jamaicans are very much like ability first, then we can like start warming to you and stuff like that.
It's essentially recognizing whether you're the real deal, basically.
Because at the end of the day, they're thinking that you're coming over there to take their food, when all you want to know there to do is obviously just showcase yourself and do the best that you can. But it's almost like, is it a jealousy thing? Is it not? But they don't want. They and naturally they're over there and they're trying to make it. They're all them players that they're trying to make it out of Jamaica and trying to carve out a career for themselves, whether it be in Europe, in the States, or wherever. And like they see another one coming over from overseas and they're trying to take their food. Like, you're not like we're here to
We're in
help you.
this
We're trying
together,
to help
yeah.
you. You get me? But like I get it. I completely understand it. You completely get it. But there was that. Like you have to break down barriers and you have to showcase yourself, and like it took a while for them, like a short while for them to warm to me. But once they could see that, like I could handle the ball and like I was a decent enough player, then like I got on with everyone just fine.
Do you feel that was amplified in any way, shape, or form, the fact that you were coming from England in particular?
No, not really. Well, there was a bag of us that come from England. You know what I mean? There was a load, but especially it probably got highlighted more for me because I was one of the only ones in the under-23s that were from England. Do you get what I mean? So when I was with the 23s, they were probably the harshest with me, rather than the senior team. And it was like I'll never forget this one session. It was actually my first time meeting up with him, and it was in Jamaica. And like the training facilities were horrific, but like my first call up was obviously, like I said, with the senior team against Australia and England. But then my second call up was then with the 23s, and I played a few games. Obviously, I was still a young kid, and I remember, like, nobody was talking to me. I was on the coach on the way to training, sitting on my own, nobody really talking to me. There's blazing their music as they do start training, and I was just murdering everybody in training. And then everyone wants to be a friend on the coach journey back. You know what I mean? Like laughing and joking, laughing at the other boys that are getting stripped. But that's almost like, that was like me arriving and just saying, yeah, I'm here. Like, now what? Like you have to respect me because I can kick ball.
Yeah. See, at the top of that, obviously you mentioned there was whispers of obviously potentially the England youth teams having a look at you. And at any point, was it just a given that, you know, as soon as Jamaica came calling, you was going to go? Or was there a bit of deliberation around that as well?
Yes, I just wanted to play football. Like, that is it. Like, I honestly, like, it was literally first come, first serve. If it was England, great, brilliant. But it was Jamaica, and probably it was an unbelievable decision. Like, loved every minute of it. Like I said, like, traveling all over the world, like, been to countries that wouldn't even, like, dream of going and stuff like that. And, like, off the back of, like, my own, but, like, remember going to South Africa. That was nuts. Like, crazy, crazy country. Obviously, mad dangerous over there. Like, getting police escorts everywhere. Like, just experiences like that that will live with you forever. But yeah, obviously experiencing playing against, obviously against England at Old Trafford. I played in some unbelievable games, played in two Gold Cups. Again, brilliant experience traveling around the States with them. It was just like the things that can't be taken from you. So, not all good.
So, you know, let's look at that journey. And obviously, you know, you played for so many different clubs, so many different players that you would have played against, but also so many managers that you would have played under. Well, who were the ones that really, you know, were memorable for you for both good and bad reasons?
Do we really want to talk about the bad?
I think it's important, though. I think, you know, it's recognising...
I won't name names, so I think that's disrespectful, and
yeah,
I wouldn't want it to come out.
Maybe just share the experiences around, yeah, you know, what had happened and how it made you feel, and maybe a key learning that people can kind of take away from it, thinking about when interacting with players in the future.
Right, I'll start with the best manager slash coach that I think I've had, and he's probably the worst coach, not the worst, but did little to no coaching, but Keith Curl. When I had him at Notts County, and then I actually signed for him when he was at Carlisle. I went up there, and he, for me personally, was the best man manager I come across. I'll never forget this quote that he said. I remember when we was at Notts, and he was actually training at St George's Park for a season, and like come in, and he's having banter with a couple of lads who like weren't regular starters, if you get what I mean. I was like, hey, old gaffer, any danger you having that sort of banter with me and never get anything from me? He goes, what do I need to worry about you for? He goes, you play every week. I need to focus my attention on the ones that don't play. And that really resonated with me. It's like, I don't need to focus on the ones that are playing because they're taking care of themselves. They're happy. They're in the starting 11. They're in that 3 o'clock team. They're getting their appearance bonus. You need to keep the ones that are not playing on side, because there is going to come a time when you need them. And when that time does come, you don't want them to be like, oh, I'm not playing for him, or completely toss off the game or whatever. Do you get what I mean? Like, so, and that taught me that football is not just about the starting 11. With England, we use a lot of the phrase starters and finishers. Like, you need your finishers. It's vitally important. You get suspensions, injuries, dips in form. You need a squad to come through, and the ones that aren't your first 11, your starters, to come in and affect the game as well as you can. And the only way you can do that is by keeping them on board. That really resonated with me a lot, and I thought that was really intelligent. And I learned so much from him. I remember a couple of boys having like family issues, and he was like, listen, I don't need to see you for the rest of the week as long as you're in Friday. I'm ready for Saturday, no problem. I signed for him at Carlisle, and I know my missus was like, obviously was buzzing at the time. But when I signed for Carlisle, it was me and Clint Hill was there. Obviously, Clint was 40 at the time. I was, 36, going on 37. And he was after, if, as long as there was a Saturday to Saturday, there was no midweek fixture. After Saturday's game, it was like, see you Thursday. And it was just like, he knew that, like, lived in London, got a young family, my missus works. And he was really understanding of that. And me being in Carlisle wasn't conducive to my lifestyle. So it was almost like, that was the, you come up here, do the business for me, but I'll look after you.
Yeah. But the key thing in that, you know, is trust.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it often goes overlooked in the sense of, like, actually, I'm going to empower you to do what it is that you need to do, as long as you know, so it's one of them ones, you scratch my back, I scratch your sort of thing. It's like, do you think that would have happened had you been younger? Because obviously you mentioned that you were 36. Do you think there was any consideration with the fact, actually, you know what, you're at that stage of your career, you might need to manage your physical load a bit more?
No, I don't think that. I think when you're younger, you go and you make that decision to go up north or down south, wherever it may be. I don't think there's that. If you sign for the club and bring your family, or you don't sign for the club and leave, do you get what I mean? But I think when you're older, I think you've almost earned that right. And obviously, I worked with Curly before. He knew what I was like. He knew that I loved being in the gym and I looked after myself. Obviously, I played till I was 37. So, like, that isn't a fluke. You have to look after yourself. You get what I mean? You have to go in the gym and do the extras. And Clint Hill was the same. He was obviously from Liverpool, again, had a family. And Hilly was he was 40 years old. He was older than me, and incredible, Nick. And listen, it's no coincidence that he played that for that length of time as well, because he looked after his body. And that word that you use, trust, is probably the biggest thing in football. If you don't trust somebody, how are you gonna work for them? How are you gonna work with them? Do you get what I mean? So, yeah, Curly definitely trusted me, and I trusted him. That's why I went up there.
Who else?
The good ones. Okay, so spoke about the best man manager. Probably speak about the best coach now. Probably Derek McInnes. When I was at Bristol City, often joined in the sessions, and he was unbelievable footballer, but really good. But obviously, most recently, I can't remember where he is now, but most recently he was at Aberdeen, who's doing well, and then lost his job there. But he's managing again. I can't remember. I think, is it Dundee? Might be at Dundee. But he was at Bristol City for a while. He was top coach, very, very good. Loved his detail. And I have to say, although I didn't get on with him the best, I thought Nigel Clough was an excellent coach as well, like, really good. He had this aura about him that I didn't always see eye to eye with him and agree with him on certain things, but on the grass, I thought he was outstanding, and he knew how to get the most out of players, and yeah, he was a very good coach.
Just on that though, Jamal, what does that actually look like? You know, so just to give you a bit of context, and, you know, I work as a coach developer, I'm speaking to coaches all the time, and, you know, some of the questions I try and, you know, get into the real heart of is around reflection, around their strengths, their areas for development, And I hear many times, I'm great at building relationships, great at, you know, getting the most out of my players. What does that actually look like in terms of at that level? You know, you're talking there about, you know, you've got the most out of play. You didn't always see eye to eye with him, but you respect that what he did on the grass. What does that look like practically?
I just think it's like, as I think, firstly, before you're a coach and stuff, you're a man and you're dealing with other men. And I think just understanding what that man, what that player needs is so important. I think that's, and like, do you know what? I'm learning that like more and more each day that, again, we alluded to it a little bit earlier, that not everyone's different. Do you know what I mean? Like, okay, so to give you an example, when I was at Barnet, like played with John Akinde, and our manager was Mad Dog. Obviously, you know who Mad Dog is. Martin Allen, for the listeners who don't know who that is. So Mad Dog, like John Akinde, at halftime could have scored a hat trick. And Martin Allen would come in at halftime and grill him and just say, I need more, and batter him. And he'd go out and score enough. But he knew how to rile him up, how to get the most out of him. And I've not seen another manager while I was at Barnet do the same with him. They didn't know how to get the best out of him. It was nuts. It was like, he wasn't saying anything with much substance, but it was almost like he'd get under his skin to make him give him that little bit more. And it was weird. But I'm going back to like Nigel Clough. I just thought he, on the grass, he just had that connection of, not necessarily individually, but I think he knew how to drive a team and get the most out of his teams. You get what I mean? And I think that's important. I'm learning it now as a coach, that I'm learning that like three of my players can take getting absolutely grilled. They'll put their hand up and like get on with it. I'm learning that six of them are really emotional, that they need an arm around them. And that's fine, because they're at that age where they are really emotional and stuff like that. And I have to understand that. And they can't take a grilling. So I have to, although they might not be performing how I'd like them to, I have to tell them in a way that they know that I'm not happy, but in a roundabout way. And I just think it's just understanding, instead of like, okay, so we played Youth Cup a couple of weeks ago to Northampton. Lost 3-2. Their midfielder scores a hat-trick. He scores two free kicks and a worldie from 25 yards. It was 2-0 down. We got it back to 2. He scores another free kick in the last minute. Gutted. Like we didn't showcase ourselves as well as we have been doing this season, and as well as I know. But for the fans in the stadium and the chairman watching and the first team manager watching, like, it's a disappointing result and all the rest of it. And like, I have to wear that. I had to wear that. So after the game, like, I could quite, and probably last year, I would have gone in the change room and it would have been like just shouting, screaming, but not saying anything with any substance. It would have just been a shout and a scream. Whereas I went in the dressing room and I was like, I was more disappointed for them. And you have to find ways to uplift your team. Do you get what I mean? Uplift your boys, because guess what? Football changes like that. And there's another game, and there was round the corner 3 days later. So instead of me dwelling on that, and thought, yes, we had to dissect the game and what we didn't do right and what we need to do better. But I found that as a team leader, as a manager, as a coach, that I have to pick my boys up. And we went on Saturday to win 5-2. So one game doesn't turn you into a bad player. Mm-hmm. So like, they're life lessons. And again, that environment of being in the stadium, instead of playing in front of 50 fans along the touchline on a Saturday, you was playing in front of 500, and the chairman's watching, the manager's watching, the CEO's watching, and all these eyes are on. And now everyone's saying, oh, not good enough, not good enough. And if I'm another one to say not good enough, then I'm just throwing words out that everybody else is. So like,
yeah, no, definitely.
Go on, sorry.
Just interested to obviously unpack that a little bit further, because obviously you mentioned that, you know, you gave the example of Martin Allen and how he got the best out of John Akinde. I'm conscious, did you ever catch yourself, maybe less so now, but maybe in your recent times as a coach, not without reason, but almost replicating the behaviours of coaches and managers that have you've played under, and not and expecting similar or like responses from the players?
Yeah, 100%. And it's been, my journey has been one where I'm learning on my feet. And listen, I'm like yourself, I'm a father, and I don't like to shout and scream at my kids. I think it's pointless. There's no substance.
Yeah.
You keep shouting at your kids, you might get that fear factor initially, but if you keep on doing it, it's just going to be whatever, dad's shouting again. You know what I mean? So I'm like, and it's almost the same with my team. If every time we have a bad performance and I just scream and shout, listen, don't get it twisted. There's times where I have to raise my voice and I have to show teeth just to get a reaction. But if that's it as a constant, then I think the novelty wears off. So I've learned that instead of just screaming and shouting, and listen, I wasn't a screamer and a shouter, but I would sometimes fly off the rails, and sometimes I look back at it and I think, was that necessary? Is there other ways? And, mm-hmm. and I think I'm learning to, what I do now is at halftime, when halftime comes, I go away obviously with my assistant, and I have a couple of minutes for them to, whether good, bad or indifferent, for them to reflect and for me to reflect and for me to dissect what I'm going to say and how I'm going to deliver it, and the same after a game. And I think that's really important, because listen, no matter what field you're in, we all can live off emotions. And if every time after a game or at halftime I'm emotional, then I don't think that's very good. So I have to try and remove the emotions from the summary of the game and at halftime.
Did you, just on that, you touched on it a little bit while you were talking there, and one of my questions was going to be, how have you found, because, you know, being a parent influence your behaviours as a coach in any way, shape or form? Because I think one of the key things that we've definitely seen over the last few years is the coaching industry as a whole seems to be getting younger and younger and younger, maybe where they haven't necessarily got these lived experiences, some of the things that you talked about earlier, or potentially not having family to think about and kids to raise and whatnot. So, how has that shaped your coaching in any way, shape or form?
It's been for my interview for England, to get the job, I had to do a presentation, and it was part of the presentation was name six milestones what shaped you as a person and as a coach.
Is that the last one, was it?
Yeah. And that hit me different. That was just wow. And I'd never had a question like that before. Obviously I had time to prepare and stuff like that. And it just got me thinking, and don't want it to just be generic and stuff like that. And obviously I had to put my kids in there. And obviously first I had to put my daughter, because I had her so young. And probably without my daughter, I don't know where I'd be, because she gave me that sole focus that it's not just me now. Mm. It's, I have somebody else to fend for and stuff like that.
How old was he?
16, going on 17. So I was a pup. That was massive for me. But before every game that I played in, I always used to bless myself. Obviously my last little boy, he hasn't obviously witnessed me been here while I was playing, but I'd always bless myself three times, because when I crossed that white line, I knew that I was always doing it for my children. And that was just, that was, and obviously now coaching, It's just like that for me, whatever I'm doing, there has to be a purpose. There's like I'm striving for greatness again, because I wouldn't like in my footballing career, I had a successful career. There was longevity in it, and I want the same in my coaching career. And I want to progress, and I want to go as far as I can go, wherever that may be. But I'm doing it for my kids. I'm doing it for my eldest still, and I'm doing it for my youngest. And I want and I and setting examples. Do you get what I mean? It's setting examples. I want my kids, like, listen, your kids are a product of their environment, and like I need their environment to be positive, and like and good. Like my missus has got a really good job. Like I've got a good job, but we want better jobs. We want to progress, and we want to show our kids that yes, we come. Your parents come from hardworking background, like. And my daughter, obviously, she's 21, she's at university, and she's following those footsteps. My son's at Nottingham Forest, he's an under 16, and he's striving for a scholarship. And I'm teaching him now that he hasn't had his decision yet, but when you do get your decision, whether it be good or bad news, like you crack on. You if you work hard, if you didn't get something, you have to go and find something else. Like you have to go and get a scholarship somewhere else. If like if you don't If you make it at Forest, if you make it as a scholar at Forest, brilliant. The hard work just starts now. So like that mindset has got to be that you can't rest on your laurels.
100%. I think the key kind of phrase that jumps out at me as you're speaking is control what you can control. Don't leave your fate or your destiny, however you wish to look at it, in other people's hands. Do everything that you can so that at the end of that situation, regardless of what the outcome is, you can turn and say, "Well, I did my best. You know, I did everything I could." And I think it's a great way to look at it. I mean, I can definitely relate to that. You know, I wasn't as young as you when I had my first one. I was 21, going on 22. And I'll tell you what, man, I had to grow up quick, man. I had to grow up quick. I was doing, you know, I was umming and ahhing about what I was actually going to do. But then, you know, by that point, I was like, nah, I can't um and ah anymore. I've got to make a decision. Yeah, you know, I'm here 8 and a half years later, and I'm thinking to myself, right, you know, I've done some crazy things, but that put me back on track to the things I needed to be get, you know, needed to focus on. I even recently, you know, completed my master's. I didn't even have an undergrad, and I said to myself, right, I'm gonna, you know, I want to get a degree. Managed to get myself into a master's, complete that, and it was just like, well, some people ask me, why did you do the master's? I said, I'll be honest with you, part of it was for me, but really it was for my kids. You know, if I can turn around in 10 years' time or 15 years' time, when they're getting ready to think about university and things like that, and be like, well, at least you can do is get an undergrad. Your dad's got a master's. Do you know what I mean? Just almost like, you know, like you said, you know, coming from a hard working background, setting some standards for them to kind of look up to. So, you know, I totally get that. Now, you mentioned there are a couple positive examples. You know, you use some names. What are some of the negatives that, you know, you've been into, you know, you've experienced in your journey?
Negatives. It's been a lot of negatives. I remember. So going back when I signed, obviously I signed Schoolboys, a scholarship with Millwall. But Charlton bought me from Millwall after 6 months into my scholarship. But listen, everyone knows that Millwall's got the reputation of not painting itself with glory to players, people of ethnic backgrounds, to put it diplomatically. But so when I'll never forget that when I was signing my scholarship form, so Mill done it really, really good. They were big on making an evening of it. I'm sure a lot of clubs do it. But it was like put on a suit, you have to wear a shirt and tie, whatever. Parents come along to the den. Big sign in, meal, dinner, sign in, obviously, blah blah blah. Brilliant, buzzing, absolutely buzzing. Obviously, like I said, from like when I signed for Millwall as a schoolboy, I was like, yeah, want to be a footballer, want to be a YTS, blah blah blah, want to be a pro. And I'll never forget, it was like best day of my life and the worst. So I had the whole evening, whatever, brilliant pictures taken, signing. Thinking, yeah, I'm well on the way to being a pro. Got back in the car, my mum and my stepdad, like, thinking, buzzing, sitting in the back, talk about the night. My mum turns around and she was like, right, listen, give you some context. My mum was a strict, Jamaican woman. Like she was mum and dad. Like there was no grey areas, black and white. This is what it is. Boom, boom, boom. She turned around and she was like, listen to me. You listen to me good. You've got to get your head right. Because they told me that you're never going to be a professional footballer. They signed you because you're a good kid. You're a good lad. That's what my mum said to me on the night of signing a scholarship. What was meant to be the best day up to date of my life. And she said, they said that Jamal's never going to be a professional footballer. It was just like there were spaces and he's a good kid. So we thought, yeah, like, why not? And let me tell you, that made me grow up as a 15-year-old double quick. I couldn't believe it. It was incredible. I was just like, yeah. And my the youth team manager, he hated me. Again, I won't name names, but it was just one of them things. And I just grafted and I worked hard every day. And I grafted and I worked hard. And when they told me that I couldn't, I could. When they told me that I wouldn't, I would. They told me I wouldn't make it, I did. You know what I mean? So, like, I try and kick this knowledge onto my son, and I will to my younger two sons, that don't let nobody tell you that you can't. But if you've got that drive, if you want to be something, I'm having these conversations now with my boy. He's 15. He's at Forest, and we both know what it's like. As a footballer, being, it's like a roller coaster. You have one good game, you think you've cracked it. You have a bad game, and like he's in floods of tears. He's not starting, he's in floods of tears. So I'm always trying to like kick that knowledge onto him that as long as you want it, you'll be fine. But like you can't let the Instagram life fool you and blah, 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 and having one good game or putting a ball in the stanch. One, like they're isolated incidents. You have to be consistent. So I think feeding that to the kids in this day and age is so tough because, like, for me, fun was, when I was his age, was taking a ball, going out the front on my own and kicking the ball 1,000 times up against the wall, as high as I could to trap the ball, as hard as I can to trap the ball, to practice turns inside, outside. The kids aren't doing that today. And, like, listen, society's a lot different for various reasons. Technology obviously being the main, Instagram, social media. But like I said to him, if you want this, then obviously you've got my support. But you, like, you sitting in and playing FIFA all day ain't helping you. So it's just, I just think, like, life lessons, trying to kick that onto your kids, like whether it's my your own personal kids or the ones that you're coaching, is just vitally important. And hopefully I deliver that in the right way to them, because like I say to my boys at Peterborough, like, and I wholeheartedly mean it, that like I love them all to bits, and I truly do. Don't get me wrong, they annoy the life out of me at times, but like I want, you know, the God's honest truth is, like, are all of them gonna make it? Absolutely not. Probably two in the group are, but me, I'm like, people keep saying I'm too emotional as a coach because I want to help everyone. They say you should just focus on the best ones. I can't do that.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting one, because, you know, something, you know, links back to something you said earlier. Someone, you know, you could be playing brilliantly, manager's having you, manager gets sacked, new guy comes in, he ain't having you.
Mm.
It's all perceptions, right, and opinions. But I think the key thing for me in what you said there is, you're recognizing that, you know what, you're going to do what you can for them whilst they're under your provision. And whether that means them ending up as a player in the first team at Peterborough, whether that means they've developed a career elsewhere in the game, whether that means that you've developed them as a, you know, as a person, where they've got the necessary life skills, the confidence and whatever they need to kind of live life. You know what I mean? And I think that's the key piece. It's just, it's like that old saying, right? How does it go again? I'm not even going to try and butcher it. So essentially, it's the impact that you have on them that's going to be lasted. It's not what you can do for them in terms of where you take them on in a career or a role, but actually how you've influenced them as a person. And I think that, like, I think what you're doing is certainly aligned with the way that I look at things as well. It's like, what can I do to add value to every person in my care?
Mm.
And the key word that you used there, you know, is that love piece. And it doesn't have to be literally, but it's just a case of, no, I actually care about your development. Mm. I want you to get better, because whatever you do is a reflection of you, in reflection of myself in you, and what I've been able to support you. So I think that's a great way to go. I'm really conscious of time, and you've covered a lot already, and I'm sure there's so many other things that we can unpack. But having now been a coach for the last few years, what would you say has been the most useful reflection or lesson that you've had?
Do you know what? I think, and it's only up to recent that I've actually really started to take it in, like a couple of weeks ago, I went up to Man United and I shadowed Mark Dempsey and Travis Binion up there, which obviously was brilliant. Been to Bristol City and shadowed my old teammates when Lee Johnson, obviously he's at Hibernian now, Jamie McAllister. I shadowed Justin Cochran when he was with the Football Association. And those, a couple of weeks ago, I was with the under-15s with Will Antwi and Neil Ryan, with the under-19s with Simon Rusk and Andy Edwards. And for me, if I could strip out little good bits of everybody and add that to what I've already got, that's only going to enhance me. And the learning that I'm getting of so many other people is vital for me, because my journey's just started, and everybody, again, like in football, like in playing, everybody's journey is different. And some people are ahead of me in their journey over a shorter time frame. I'm ahead of some people in my journey. But I think the most important thing for me is my journey is my journey, and my learning is a reflection of that. And where I am right now, I'm really happy in terms of where I was and where I'm at now. And I think I'm definitely progressing as a person and as a coach, and just to continue to learn enough of other influential people. Obviously being a coach developer in the Football Association, there's so many good people within that, and I'm rubbing shoulders with obviously the best of the best, obviously people like Tim Dittmar, who's kicking knowledge onto me all the time, and some of the coaches is brilliant, and I think that's invaluable, you know. And as long as you stay humble and focused and hungry, I think we all can achieve anything that we want to.
No, I think you're spot on, Jamal. And I think, you know, the key thing there is take a little bit from everyone, but not just the positives, but also take a little bit of the negatives and recognize what you need to leave behind. And I think that's where people often go wrong. They often always say, you know, I want to look out for, you know, how am I going to develop? What are the things I need to learn? Yeah, but there's positives and negatives to that. And, you know,
Just to interrupt you.
Yeah, go for it.
When you ask me about best coaches and worst coaches, and I don't want to talk about names of the worst coaches, but I actually learned so much of how not to be as well.
And that's exactly what I'm referring to.
Yeah, that's, and for me, that was, I'm actually working with someone that was a part of his management team before, and we talk about it all the time. And I always speak about, I learned so much of him because of how I don't want to be and how I don't want to be perceived, and how I don't want to treat my players, or how I don't want my players to think I am. And you just obviously said it there, which is a great point, that you can learn off the good, but you can also learn off the bad. And I've definitely done that.
So just a final note, what's the biggest lesson that you've learned to avoid?
I think the biggest lesson learned is to always be respectful. Respect is just people may not agree with things you say and all the rest of it. I think as long as you're honest and you're respectful, I think that carries you so much further than whatever ability you've got. You know what I mean? I just think it's imperative, and I tell you this, there's not enough honest and respectful people.
That's just on a human level, right?
Yeah, 100%, 100%. So remember, and football's ruthless. Football is ruthless. Everyone's, it's like it's dog eat dog. Some of the stories that I've heard and I've witnessed and I've been a part of, like, listen, I say football, but like, I think it's life. But I just think as long as you're an honest person and you're respectful, I think people will respect that. Do you get what I mean? Speak to people how you want to be spoken to. You may not agree with everything somebody's saying, but as long as you're respectful in it, I think that will carry you far.
Yeah, no, I'm smiling though, because I've just reminded me of a story. So when I first started getting into this coach development thing, I remember one of the first courses I delivered, and I just say how I see it. If I don't think it's good enough, I'll tell you it's not good enough. Not because I'm trying to get onto you, I'm being malicious with it. I'm just telling you, no, there's a lot more that you I can see. There's a lot more that you can do, but you're not pushing yourself to that limit, and I won't use the word that they used, but I remember one of the learners came to me and said, in fact, it was a course that I'd done recently where he knew one of the people on the first course I delivered. And the guy was like, all the guys that you were responsible for on that course thought you were. But they all loved you because you just kept it honest with them. You're being 100 with them. And they didn't necessarily like what you had to say. But once that feeling had passed, they recognized that the reason you said it is because you only want them to get better.
Mm.
And they respected you for that. And that's one thing that's always stuck with me. It's almost like, it. Even now, when I approach the situation, I'm always saying to myself, well, do you want me to make you feel better or do you want me to help you get better?
Mm.
And if it's the former, I'm not your guy.
Yeah.
I'm not here to make you feel better. And, you know, and not because I don't care or because I don't want you to feel good, but that's just not my job. It's a really interesting point, you know, and it just reminded me of that story as well. But Jamal, look, I'm conscious of time. I just want to say a massive thank you for obviously taking the time out to be with me and have this conversation. I'm sure there's going to be some key bits that have kind of landed with a few people that listen to this, and even for them to reflect on whether, you know, whether they're actually taking opportunities to learn things that they should be leaving behind, as well as the things that they're hopefully going to implement going forward. But yeah, massive thanks, man.
No problem at all. No problem. Good to talk to you, my friend.
Likewise. Look after yourself, man.
Yeah, yeah. And you, man. We'll catch up soon.
Definitely.
All right. Tell man. Take care.
Well, there you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at The Coaches Network or on Twitter at The Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.